It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast.
Well, then Perez has got the better of it, and he looks to get the better of Schmeichel.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. This is me, Liam, from arsenalvision.co.uk. And in today's show, James and Paul only will be discussing the Dynamo Zagreb beating. Arsenal 3, Dynamo Zagreb 0. And what a difference a few days make. Elliot cannot be with us because unfortunately he is ill at the moment. So get well soon, Elliot. And Tim had guests around, so recording the podcast is going to be a bit difficult. So we're going to have the duo discussing the great victory, excellent victory, at the Emirates on Tuesday night. Our football was much slicker, much quicker, and we played really well. Probably our best performance for a while. Yes, you can take into consideration the opposition. But as we've seen, even against poorer sides, when we're not on our game, we find it hard to beat anybody, really. But that wasn't the case in midweek. I thought we passed the ball really well. Ozil was magnificent. Sanchez was magnificent. And when those two are playing so well, then, you know, you're all going to have a chance. And that's really exciting. Yeah, there's going to be many of that discussion on the podcast, so I won't go into it too much now. But yeah, I really enjoyed Alexis moving into the middle for that brief spell. And I loved Ozil's performance overall as well. Wonderful showing. Let's hope that kickstarts our season, because last few weeks has been a bit iffy. But we look a lot better, and hopefully we can continue that on the weekend against Norwich City. Anyway, without further ado, I'm going to pass you on to the guys and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision Podcast. This is Paul, a.k.a. Poznan in my pants, for the Thanksgiving Day Dinamo Zagreb 3-0 trouncing at the Emirates review. So, alas, Elliot is heavy with flu, while Tim is heavy with soiree, so it's just me and James. Yes, a welcome return from James. Now, I've just actually reviewed the recording of the pod, and given that it was just me and James, and actually I'm recovering from a cold, it got a little odd at times, but we had fun. Hopefully you will too. Welcome back, James.
Good to be back, Paul.
Yeah, we missed you. We haven't heard from you for a while.
I know. I've been in the dark dungeons of work and tied up for quite a while, but it's I'm glad that we could finally arrange a pod where I can make an appearance, albeit without both Tim and Elliot on this occasion.
Yeah, serious career man these days. Of course, it doesn't help Linus's theory that you and Tim Stillman are the same man, seeing as you're here and he's not. One more time, suspiciously.
Indeed. I'm sure one of these days we will seek to disprove such a theory. But for now, the rumours will but continue to spread.
Yes, I'm not so sure. Anyway, on with the game. So let's start with the lineup. In some ways you could say, yeah, it was a pretty obvious lineup. But I'll throw a couple at you. So Gibbs started the last game, and Campbell, you could say, was dropped. He then played 12 minutes, or I don't know what it was exactly, against WBA, missed a sitter. Wenger had a meltdown on the touchline, Now, he did do, we did discuss on the pod, he did have a couple of good runs and a couple of moments, but really he was only on the pitch for a few minutes and only did a couple of things, and he's back in the starting line. So that was one interesting piece. Obviously, we got Flamini in there as our new DM. That was kind of an obvious call, but I guess there were options. And then I guess the other interesting ones across the back, you had Bellerin, who apparently he's been having a niggle for a while, and he had a niggle during the game and probably before the game. And you also had, you know, Monreal, Gibbs. You had some options there. Obviously, there was the good old days with Ospina when we might play him against Dinamo Zagreb. But what were your thoughts on the lineup?
The only one was the Gibbs-Campbell change that was up in the air. I wasn't sure if the Gibbs decision against West Brom was one that sort of displayed Arsene's lack of faith in Joel, perhaps rewarding Gibbs for his goal against Tottenham and his performance during that short cameo. Perhaps with hindsight now, with Campbell having coming right back in, despite, albeit a small period of time, not having a great, putting on a great show in the final minutes against West Brom, that one chance in particular. Perhaps it was just, you know, given it was an away game, given the type of match you were facing against West Brom, he felt more secure playing a Gibbs-type player. I don't know. But it was a little strange for Joel to come right back in. But given the way that we knew we were going to attack them from the off, we were going to pen them back at home, maybe he felt Campbell just provided more of a goal threat, more attacking dynamism going forward, yeah. Which, of course, proved to be true. With regards to the other positions, I think Flamini was always going to be the player to come in to fill the vacant spot of Coughlin and Arteta. And Bellerin, did he have a niggle? My impression of his quotes was more that, you know, he's only recently come back from an injury, thus he...
No, he definitely talked about a niggle, because certainly one he had during the game, because he said something, he's fascinated by Bellerin's small groin, had said something that he had something about an issue to do with his groin, and then he said he had to take them off. I was like, oh, holy shit, that's a little old school. Poor fella. But I think he meant two players, because he was explaining his two subs. But there was definitely, he explained that, and he explained Olivier had a bit of an ankle issue, and he was being cautious with both of them. Something like that. That's why he didn't bring off Sanchez, blah, blah, blah.
Right, and he rested Sanchez by bringing him into the middle, of course. I mean, he got a fantastic rest during that period of time, Sanchez did. So.
That was pretty funny in the press conference. I don't know if you saw it, when he said that... He gets tired when he takes him off. He rests when he plays him. So the journalists seem to find that was funny. I mean, there's probably... I mean, it's obviously not physiologically true, but it might actually be somewhat mentally true. I was saying on Twitter that, where does Sanchez get his energy from? I think he imagines playing with his two bounding Labradors or whatever they are. In his head when he plays, his two dogs are running alongside him, invisibly, as he bounds around the pitch, because it's the only explanation for that man's energy. I mean, he's unreal. So, we've enjoyed Arsenal winning, and we've seen Arsenal losing recently. I've come to the conclusion I much, much more enjoy the winning. I can't understand why people didn't come along to this game. I mean, there were a lot of empty seats there. I mean, you didn't get along to the game, did you, James?
I didn't, although it was actually the first time since the first game of the season that I was offered a ticket from someone I know, which was but an indication that the desire for people to go to the game, which really is it's a pretty pivotal game for our Champions League prospects.
Yeah.
And it's,
it was always likely to be a really good game. We had to go at them, and they had to play too. They needed a win too to progress to the Europa League. It was always a candidate for being a really entertaining game. And I thought it was a spectacular game.
Well, yes, certainly from our point of view. I mean, we were electric for the large majority of that game. I mean, the quick interchange of passing, the way we pressed them high up the field. The intensity in that game, relative to West Brom, it was night and day, absolutely. you know, perhaps part of that also comes down to being back at the Emirates on the clean, flat surface.
I think that's a huge part of it. Tim and I talked about it with the West Brom game as not an excuse, but an explanation for why it was different. I mean, you got to be able to play on these pitches, and it's nothing compared to pitches in the 70s and 80s. So not in the form of excuse, but, you know, why so different in terms of performance? I mean, Arsene talked in his post-match interview, and really what hit me out of that was the plan was to go out there and play fast and move the ball. And you could do that with the at the Emirates, and you just couldn't do it at West Brom. I mean, I kind of had a series, a running order here, but screw that. You look at the first goal. That goal never happens against West Brom, no matter how good our players are. Santi digging the ball out of that corner in the back. The quick 1-2s, the triangles, zipping across to Flamini, the slide rule pass to up to Sanchez. I mean, it just doesn't happen at West Brom. Whereas here, right from the off, we were at them, and you know Campbell had a great, he had a great game, but he had a great start to it. Ozil creating trouble, and you know a really good 28 minutes of the start of it, without a goal. But you know you see those movies where like Paris is like. It's really about Paris, or it's really about the desert, or it's really about Africa, no matter what the story is. And for me, this was a game that was really about the Emirates versus West Brom. You know, the central pivotal character in this was the snooker table smooth surface that allowed us to play one electric game. That was kind of my... I don't normally focus on the Emirates, but having... puzzled over why we were so shite, especially in the first half till we got going at West Brom. You really kind of think, wow, that pitch, that's what sets us up to play football.
Yes, I mean, I certainly concur. That being said, I do also feel with this Arsenal side, one of the biggest flaws we've had for a long time is there does seem to be this sort of mental wavering that takes place given the type of fixture that we're up against. I mean, this game was very clear in the minds of the players that this was an absolute must win. I mean, there was no other way of slicing it. And we generally tend to be a team that when under that kind of cost, we bring a different type of performance, a different type of intensity. It's not something even, you know, we've seen it against, you know, plenty of times at the Emirates where we've still put in quite sluggish performances where we haven't quite been at the races for whatever reason.
Yep. And we've even seen games... Sorry, I was just going to say, we've even seen games where we were at the races and then lost focus. I mean, didn't we go up 3-0 against Anderlecht and cock that up? And here we go, 3... And you can say, oh, you know, there's probably a part of us that says, oh, it's only Dinamo Zagreb. But it was only Anderlecht. These teams are all good. They all have talent. They all have young players trying to make a name for themselves. Three of the four players who did the most running on the day were from Zagreb. I do wonder where they got all that energy from, but I'm not going to spend too much time pondering that. Guess who did more running on the day than anybody else on the pitch? I apologize for doing this to you, James.
You do this to me every time, Paul. It's question time. It's that part of the pod, huh?
Yes. 51-51 undefeated.
Well, you could have given me the chance, but you know that hint is a blessing, and Mathieu Flamini is his name, I believe. The terrier in midfield.
He was number one, but then they had the next three spots, and then I think it was Cazorla, and then maybe they had one, and then it was Ozil.
Isn't an element of that quite worrying? In the sense, you wouldn't expect, you know, a Coquelin, for example, I don't know his statistical numbers, but I wouldn't expect his numbers to be high because you would expect him to maintain a fairly, you know, sort of, small radius areas of the pitch that he actually runs into. That kind of indicates more of a box-to-box type statistic, which, you know, maybe in this type of game is somewhat feasible.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting point. One I missed, because I guess I associate him with quite a bit of travel. I mean, what was interesting was they got that dig in on Alexis early on. Pinto or somebody kneed him in the game, tried to give him a dead leg. And because I was trying to work out, why did Flamini go flying into a challenge when there was no need? You know, the one that could have been a yellow card. Oh, it was up down their end.
But yeah, it was quite early on in the game.
And it's not like we needed it. I mean, we were all over them and we had them and stuff. But the thing is, you never know what he's seen on the pitch. You might have seen that and a couple more digs at Alexis and a couple of more other things. And, yeah, you don't want him taking a yellow and we would have been all, you know, getting all high and mighty against him. But he is the score settler out there. I take it they were doing plenty of kicking when they got a chance. And he went piling in and left his mark on the guy. It was, I mean, you could hear it all, through the TV set. I mean, he really clattered into him. But, you know, I mean, he was all action. But I guess they all find their own balance. You know, him and Santi are not going to be quite the same as him and the cock. And that's how they're finding their balance. But, you know, you could also say that Cazorla does have the tendency to be this. You think of DMs in one mold, but they're not really. Cazorla is often the guy who hangs back and holds on to the ball and controls the play, and I guess Flamini is finding his own balance.
Yeah, I mean, he's becoming the more and more of that, you know, the role we associate with Andrea Pirlo. I mean, he does like to be deeper and deeper. We rarely see him as far as the pitch as even, say, you know, last season and the seasons prior. Maybe he's realised that his shooting skills are not, you know, despite how technically gifted he is. I mean, perhaps he's as equally, if not more so, frustrated than we are, having to continuously watch him, you know, miss the target as frequently as he does. And as so, you know what, that part of the game is no longer for me. I'm going to stick to the whole distributing aspect. A part of the game he does quite excellently, in fact. So. I see what you're saying, but I do fear. My fear is that against the bigger teams, where we don't dominate the ball as much, and really have a grapple hold of the match in the way that we did on, you know, on this occasion at home against a Dinamo team that we demonstrated was a side we really shouldn't have dropped points to away from home. Yeah. You know, we're not going to have quite that luxury. I guess on the other side, you associate with a 31-year-old. You know, perhaps their technical skills don't drop so much. That, you know, if anything, they continue to gain experience. But you know, as we see with Arteta, you know that their legs go. But you don't really see that with Flamini. He is full of energy. Yeah. That statistic demonstrates that in a nutshell. But also, if you just watch him, he doesn't look like, you know, one of the oldest players on the pitch. He's well up for the game. So he's clearly someone that looks after himself well, and he hasn't suffered from that side of things just yet. And I assure you, I am touching all the wood in my current abode as I say these things. But,
I tell you, one of the moments I loved, and there were a few great ones in this game, was Flamini charging into the 6-yard box when Ozil had the ball and took a shot on goal from a really good position, and Flamini's throwing his arms, remonstrating around to his best mate Ozil that he didn't pass to him. I'm like, Flamini, Ozil was in a great spot, and you're Flamini. Now, of course, he is the Flamini who scored against Spurs twice, but anyway, I thought that was pretty funny that he was up there throwing his arms around. You're the bloody DM. You know, he's the one who's supposed to be banging the ball in the net, but that was kind of a funny moment. But yeah, he's all-action style. But, I mean, to be fair, he has plenty of experience playing in our midfield, and I do think he's had a bit of a rough ride on Twitter. Here's a little quiz for you again. Because I'm a bully like this. So in fact, we may have talked about this before, but guess how many games Flamini started last season?
Let's say 15 games, all comps.
21. Now, I'm going from memory. I haven't looked it up for a while, but I believe it was 21, and he had 10 sub-starts. So he played in 31 games for us last year. So I mean, he's no newbie, kind of to our point of being worried about him. You know, he didn't really get sent off last year. He really didn't have a yellow card problem last year. He was involved in a lot of games. You know, Elliot pushed back on my now 51 games undefeated for Matthew Flamini at the Emirates in a row with, you know, how long a period of games or a period of time is that? But, you know, and also, you know, it wasn't our most illustrious phase last year, but it was a phase in which he won all his games at the Emirates. And there were various reasons why the first half of our season wasn't great. And I don't think they all start with Flamini. Yes, Coughlan made a big difference, but we also know that the returning players and the consistency and our back four or five getting themselves sorted out and in a frame of mind to be consistent made a big difference. So it'll be interesting to see how good he can be. But he had a really good performance, don't you think?
Yeah, I thought he played very well, actually. I mean, I'm not... Here's the thing. I've always attested to the fact that I think keeping Flamini as a third choice defensive mid was a wise move. I certainly don't rate him as lowly as much of the fan base do. That being said, the issue comes now is really, is he a player with enough quality in that position to hold that spot for the kind of time period we're looking to now? You know,
At two games a week.
I mean, even if you assume that he's able to maintain the fitness levels, I just worry for the big games. I do think, you know, as good as he looks in a game like this, which, as we've discussed, is probably one that is going to suit him quite well. I mean, he does like to charge forward even as a defensive mid when he finds the right opportunity. This is the kind of game where we're rarely exposed at the back. We kept that structure. And we press very high. I mean, Dinamo really struggled to create opportunities. So we were rarely under the cosh. And you know, if you look back to especially away games, you know, away games I felt is really where Coughlan comes into his own. You know, if you think back to the types of games where you just see like Flamini pointing and shouting but not leading by example in the way that he performs, and the gaps sort of appearing in those tougher games where we don't retain possession quite as well.
I think that's really fair. I guess what I'm crossing my fingers for is in a better, more settled team this year, those gaps appear less often and are less big. But we're going to have another option. I mean, Wenger was talking about buying during the winter window, as I guess he always does, if the quality's there, but it seemed a firmer yes, though you generally see his tone change at different times as the winter approaches, warms up, cools down, warms up again, cools down, depending, I guess, if they think they have a line on somebody. But a nice Gabriel-type signing from Spain would be very nice from a team that knows they're not going to win and knows they're not going to lose the league, and we steal him in January to do the Coughlan kind of thing would be very nice, I think. So I have a radical suggestion that I know everybody's going to poo-poo, as you English people say. So here it is. Now, it's radical, so you're not going to like it, but it doesn't mean it's not a good one. It doesn't mean it is. So here's my radical suggestion for DM.
Bring it on.
Koscielny.
Wow. You've really fallen into the
You've really fallen into the I've really fallen into the let me give you a little bit of rationale. What is it that Coughlan can do that Koscielny can't?
Is it are we doing rhetoricals now, or are we back to quiz time?
We're doing discussion. Nothing. So defensive, so young and so defensive. No. We're having a bit of a chat about it. Here's my provocative question. What skill or ability does Coughlan have that Koscielny doesn't?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, when you play defensive mid, I mean, it's a very different positional type of game. I mean, your body shape is often positioned in a very different manner to that of the other centre back. Koscielny is often the aggressor of the two centre backs. A lot of the defending you actually do as a defensive mid is occupying space, Making things more difficult for the way your opposition midfielders are able to break into the back line. Koscielny, of the two centre backs, generally tends to be the one that to be the aggressor of the two. You know, his interception rate is phenomenal. He's often
as
the
is
one.
As is Calcalans.
Oh no, absolutely. Listen, but I think
as a like for like replacement, because I think where people go is, oh well, we had this debate about Vermaelen, blah blah blah. But Vermaelen was a bit shit. He, you know, they. I mean, he was good at times, and he had good games. But he was also a bit of a liability, which is not what you want a DM. He had physical attributes to be a DM, but he didn't have the mental ones. I would maintain that Koscielny has all of the mental attributes. He has focus, he has positioning, he has smarts. He certainly has every physical attribute, the quickness, the tackling, the intercepting. You know, he has all of that aspect of it. And all of the smarts to go with it. He knows where it's to be. He's just as quick. We got Gabriel. I don't see it as a long-term solution.
But you know, I appreciate the theory behind it.
Good.
And we are
good.
But
and now moving on.
We are but theorizing.
We are.
You know, there's also an aspect of it that comes with just experience of playing a position there. There are parts of a game that are just, you know, if you throw someone like a Koscielny, whatever you say about his attributes, there are going to be moments in games that he will never have faced before in that position. Like, there are things that he would have to deal with that are constantly going to be new to him. Okay,
but was that largely true of, say, a player like Emmanuel Petit or Gilberto or these guys who got repositioned at some stage? And conversely, what are our other choices? You know, Cazorla, Ramsey is a choice, but it doesn't really work. At least, maybe not to the level we needed to against the big teams. So anyway, I'm just floating it out there as my rogue idea that I still haven't worked out. I agree in terms of experience, and you got to learn the position, and can he learn under fire in a critical season? And I'm not saying we don't go out and sign somebody. Just saying.
But more importantly, though, really, is of our four defenders, he is our most important. And as soon as you take him out, you know, we've actually seen, although Gabriel is a far more similar type of defender to Koscielny, we've looked far more comfortable as a back four when it's been Gabriel alongside Koscielny, or Mertesacker alongside Koscielny, than when Gabriel has been placed alongside Pear. And of course, I mean, these relationships, especially amongst defenders, sometimes take time to develop and to become more fruitful. But I think the sacrifice of taking Koscielny out of that centre-back partnership would also be a major deficit that we'd be encumbered with. Obviously, I mean, that being said, with Chambers as a possibility at defensive mid, I don't know how convinced I am by that.
I'm not very convinced he'd been touted in the short term. I think that's a big ask, and I think he's clearly a bit overwhelmed by his responsibilities and the pace of the game generally at the moment, more than physically.
I totally agree. I mean, in fact, I think his attributes are fairly well suited to it. His distribution, when he's had a run of games and when he's confident, is excellent. And he obviously has various defensive attributes that complement the position well. I fear that to put him in such a pivotal position for the team, given his general attitude, he comes across as quite a shy, he hasn't quite matured as someone who I feel would really sort of take that opportunity with both hands and really believe that he could be the man to sort of take that position in a club like Arsenal just yet.
Well, the amazing thing is, it's there for him. I mean, Arsene can look him straight in the face and say, you know, you'll get a chance at some stage, and boy, it's there for you if you step up. So it'll be very interesting for him.
He's certainly talented. I'd be concerned by it, but I mean, I think, you know, concerns are also brought in when you play matches. The one thing I will say about this DM position, given we're on the subject, is I think it's obviously a position Arsene's been looking at closely. I would hazard a guess that he had tried to bring one in over the summer. I mean, he's definitely planning on bringing one in at the very least this coming summer, was going into this season, given Arteta and Flamini's contracts both are due to run out. So I would imagine already going into this window, he's got a couple of players in mind. You know, last summer was probably partly down to availability.
Yeah, maybe like Villarreal, where they said they moved for him early because they had the need, because Santos was shit. Maybe a player that they have their eye on for the summer, like you say, they can move forward. They can do a Malaga and move him forward.
Right. The worry is actually coming in January. Is, you know, I think the biggest where we really see perhaps the deficits of playing someone like a match is any type of away game, and of course, you know, your City up coming up at home in January. We have Stoke away, Liverpool away, which under Jurgen I could really see being the exact type of game where if we're not defensively disciplined, etc., could become exposed, and then Chelsea at home towards the end of that month. So.
Yeah,
you know, there's also more pressure on if we're going to bring someone in to do it earlier in the window, and as we know, when we have done business in January.
Oh, you and your reality. Anyway, I was just floating out the Koscielny idea, who would be available and ready, because I've heard Arsene does actually listen in on this pod. I mean, he's 24/7 at Colony doing football stuff. There's only so much you can do. So, anyway, just floating that one out for you, Arsene, to ponder over. I've had worse ideas, believe me. Anyway, let's treat ourselves. James, do you have your arsenalist.com window open there?
I do indeed, Paul. I do indeed.
Good man, good man. Right, so I'm going to hit the play button and we'll treat ourselves by watching the first goal. Are you ready?
Woo!
All right, I hit play. So there's Santi. He's knocking around in the corner. Bellerin, Ozil, Giroud. Santi gets it back, digs it out of there. I don't know anybody can do that like Santi does. Flamini with the slide rule pass. Now, the interesting thing is he pushes Alexis out to the left. It mightn't have been quite a slide rule as he likes, forcing Alexis to look up, who spots Ozil, who has literally run the length of the pitch, because it actually starts with that movement with Ozil behind Santi looking upfield. He's the only guy who looks upfield. We don't even have the ball at that point. Bellerin has almost lost the ball in passing it to Campbell, who kind of sticks out a leg and pokes it at Santi. And already Ozil looks up field and he's looking for the break. We haven't even got the ball properly at that stage. And the interesting thing when you watch Ozil is he's been tracked by one of the Dinamo Zagreb guys who's clearly busting his hump to run as fast as he can. And Ozil is pushing past him. But people will still think Ozil was only jogging. But
I think, you know, Ozil's going at pace, but I don't think he's even going at full throttle. I think he's somewhat holding his run in order to stay onside. So, in fact, one of the bigger aspects of that goal and one of the more important points of it is the run that Giroud makes quite late to the near post.
Yeah.
As he drags that centre-back away that
it's
creates
a big
all
deal.
The space. And makes that ball into Ozil.
I think it's a really interesting point on the running at full speed, because I think it's football running. I don't think they ever look like they're running at full speed. Theo doesn't. And I think it's just the nature of high-speed running in football. You got to keep your arms and legs kind of... If they're flailing all over the place, you're about to be a very bad footballer. I think they do this tidy run, which is... You know, it's a gallop, but it's a really fast gallop. Nobody has the arms pumping like you kind of think they would. I've often wondered about that, because that other guy looks like he's busting his hump. His arms are going because he doesn't think he's about to see the ball. So he's like trying to run as fast as humanly possible. And yet Ozil's still pulling away from him. But
well, here we are delving into the intricacies, of course. I mean, that being said, I think his run, he starts very much at full pelt from the halfway line. And I think as he sees, you know, respect to where he is related to the ball, I think there are moments where he holds the run ever so slightly in order to keep himself onside.
He does.
And in order to sort of time the run to match that of the pass. But yeah, I mean, if you were to average it out, he's probably hit 90% over the course of that run.
Yeah.
But, you know, I hope for the listeners' sake that they've managed to find this video in order to follow what the bloody hell we've been talking about. Because even with the video in front of me, I've been struggling to keep up.
Yeah. So. Imagine if you will. But anyway, it's the little things, isn't it?
So anyway, hell of a goal. So I maintain that goal, as I said before, that goal doesn't happen at West Brom. It only happens at somewhere like the Emirates. A superb little piece of play. Now, 5 minutes later, have you got your Arsenal, arsenalist.com? Right, let's go on to goal number two. I'm plugging away with this experiment, whether you guys like it or not. Right, goal number two. Let's hit the play button. Go. Play button didn't go. Oh, all right, there we go. Right.
This has been a great little experiment, Paul.
So, yeah, it's a terrible experiment. So it's the counter press in action. I don't think we meant to be counter pressing, but Santi has a go poking it through. It gets intercepted. Now, this reminds me of the Everton goal. The one where we were 2-0 up and I was bitching about why we were attacking at half time when we were 2-0 up. And Monreal getting too far forward and stuff. He was actually around in the centre forward position and we're exposed and, you know, we were all ahead of the ball. Only this time we scored and we weren't 2-0 up and it wasn't just before half time. So it just goes to show it's narrow margins from one game to another and one game situation to another. But I loved what Monreal did on this. I think his perception, his interception... his first touch is skill. His second touch is perfection. I don't know if he meant it to be perfection, but that knock forward of the ball makes the goal. And then the real theme of this for me is Alexis Sanchez, is he our Sergio Aguero? Did we stop that experiment way too early? I think that was, again, Everton, 2-2 against Everton. When we gave him his run at that position. I mean, the second goal and the third goal, if you swapped Sergio Aguero, apart from the fact that this guy's always fit and has bulletproof hamstrings, I mean, would you... The space he found, the quickness of his finish, we'll get on to the third goal in a moment, but that was on the third goal, such a deceptively clever run that made all that space and ran to the keeper. Not many people ran the keeper these days. It's not actually that easy. The keeper has the advantage. I was just gobsmacked by how good Sanchez was. This time accidentally at centre forward because Giroud's still on the field and later on as the official centre forward. What are your thoughts on Sanchez as Aguero?
Well, I do think he is very much Aguero in the sense that when he's on, we're on. Yeah. And in fact, outside of the Leicester game, you know, that's the one real exciting aspect of this side is we haven't really seen Alexi, mostly because of this sort of disjointed break over the summer and the lack of quote unquote rest that he's had, albeit you know just as you thought he was reaching. Sort of maximum red zone territory. He puts in arguably one of his best performances of the season. You know, he's a player that when he's on song, I mean, we're a whole different beast to contend with. And whilst I do agree, I mean, he looked excellent playing centre forward again in the type of game whereby at that point I think Dinamo had lost most hope of getting back into it, and we had been playing as well as we had been. You know, he's such a threat. I mean, his control of the way he drives at players and the runs he's able to make as he did for the third goal. And in fact, his entire all-round performance, you know, he got an assist, two goals, set up the Ozil chance where he did the flick with the back of his head. Mm. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal at Alexi. And, you know, further to your point with regards...
Yeah, I was just going to say, let's not lose sight of the hunchback moment. That was an absolute gem.
Oh, indeed.
Hunchbacks across the world. Yeah, leapt off their sofas as they're finally recognized as having a value in society. Absolute class. That guy knows what every bit of his body is doing at every moment. Just incredible.
I was just disappointed that he didn't know exactly where the ball was landing. You know, it was landing as it came off his back, and he just didn't run to it in one sort of fluid motion. I mean, that's what I really expect from Alexi.
I think he was thrown off. There was a moment where he lost it, and then he was like, holy fuck, it's right where I meant it to be. That shit actually worked.
But back to your point, I mean, that being said, I think when he is on form, the kind of position he has, the freedom he has from that left wing forward spot allows him to act as a centre forward alongside Giroud and come in more central, especially when the ball goes out to the right. So I still think we have that option. It's not a strict 4-3-3.
The problem with that is when we play against West Brom, where they've two lumbering centre backs and they're very organised, and they pin Giroud down, it tends to pin down Sanchez too. And so my question really is, why did we stop that experiment against Everton? Was it just because Sanchez was too goddamn valuable on the left wing and scoring from there and creating from there, and we couldn't risk kind of losing that before finding him as the breakthrough Aguero? I mean, you wouldn't move Aguero out to the left wing to keep Giroud in the middle. Should we?
They're different players in that regard. I mean, you know, Alexi, as he even says himself, his favourite position is out on the left. He likes being able to cut inside. So many of his goals when he was on Song last season were...
But that, you know, that wouldn't hold Arsenal back.
The carbon copy of him shifting him to the... No, but what I do think is, I think if Arsenal had a better option out on the left, then I think he'd be more willing to try it. And in fact, what we've really seen, as you've talked much about, has been the synergy between Theo and Alexis and the way that they're able to interchange and how that really frees up Alexi coming in.
Well, we're about to have Ramsey, Ox, and Campbell. Those are three options.
But
if you had Aguero at centre forward, you'd win the league, correct?
If I fit Aguero, yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, but that being said, how much faith do I have right now in Alex, a player that I think has a lot of talent and a lot of potential to come in and make that position his own? I think that takes in time. He's a player that, for whatever reason, is, despite all the technical capabilities he possesses, he seems to have struggled to find like a distinct level of form and reach the heights just yet that we're hoping for. And again, another injury setback might mean it taking. He's still going to need to get back, get his confidence back up, and get his match fitness back up. And Campbell, he's a good seventh choice, but he's not a player that I want to be starting too regularly. And ultimately, it comes down to of that selection. I think I'd rather have Giroud up top and playing Alexis at left. And I think that's ultimately been the reason why it hasn't been that much of an option, because I don't think, as of yet, that someone like an Alex has proved to Arsene that he is able to start ahead of a player like Olivier, who, you know, despite his sort of inconsistencies here and there, is a much more proven forward. And I think, perhaps in his mind, and I think that's why what we've seen with the revelation of the Theo and Sanchez combo is maybe if Alex does reach the heights that I think many would consider he has the potential to do, maybe that becomes more of an option. Maybe then you do start considering that, and especially with Ramsey back.
Arsene, if you're listening, and I know you are, I'd like to see Alexis playing up front, and I'd like to see Koscielny at DM with Ramsey on the right wing. And if you could make that happen, I'd love to see it.
So, anyway. Excellent.
Yeah. So then there was that third goal, which I quite liked. I know we're jumping around between the goals, but we talked about a lot of other stuff. And there were three absolute beauties. The ball from Campbell. Cool. Nice vision. Now, he's done great. He was up against Mattel all game, who's apparently more of a right back than a left back. And maybe that showed a little bit and why Campbell looked so good. But he was really good. But that run from Alexis, the way he adjusts the path, first he's got the timing, he's maybe a little lucky on the offside, but hey, that's what you want from a striker, to put himself in that situation where he's got nobody knowing whether it's going to be onside or not on his next run. But that the path and his adjustment to take it away and around the keeper and the quickness of the feet, because he flicks it immediately from one foot to the other to make the space, which gives him the angle. I mean, even as it is, he's still squeezing it in past the post. I mean, it's absolutely Aguero. How is that not Aguero? Both those goals. How is that not Aguero? That's what he does. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, it was an absolutely excellent run. Excellent. I mean, the close control between those two touches were phenomenal. And the, you know, displayed a truly instinctive centre forward. And of course, I mean, the type of player, if you describe him as, you know, he's got many of the equivalent sort of technical capabilities that Sergio does too. And I don't fully disagree, but I think he's not. You know,
fully agree. Come on, James.
Alexi is a player that, you know, when you think of Alexi, you think of that, you know, running down the left, cutting it, but, you know, 10 out of 10 times he cuts back inside. And I always sort of think to that Dortmund goal from last season where, from the edge of the box, he curled it around the keeper. I think that's what he loves doing most. And, you know, there were several occasions as well when we see him reach top form, the way that he drives at the fullback on the right and causes all sorts of problems. So I think, you know, perhaps it's a nice problem and a nice option for the manager to have, especially given the amount we talk about our centre forward options perhaps being somewhat lacking. I just don't really see us having a left wing forward option outside of Alexi, not a viable one, not for a title winning side, and certainly not until Alex proves to us that he is a player that deserves to be in that starting 11. And I'm not even sure if he's a left winger. I mean, he's hardly played many games out on the left. He's mostly covered as a right winger and prospectively even some sort of centre mid. So I actually think when it comes down to it, unless you want to push Ozil out to the left as a possibility, I'm not really sure if we have that much choice, frankly.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. But I would like to see if between Theo, Chamberlain and Campbell, there wasn't a decent option with Ramsey on the other side, Ozil in the middle. Campbell's done very well defensively. I mean, he got 6 tackles in, as much as anybody. He's had hot and cooler spots. You know, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's a player still in there as a utility player on one of the wings. Anyway, I think I've worn that one out. Anyway, if you had Aguero, you wouldn't move him to the left wing just because he's good on the left wing. That's my final thing, if you're listening, Arson. So, anyway, a lot of fun was to be had in that game. A lot of incidents. Any gems we've overlooked, James? Anything you want to delve into we missed along the way?
The one thing I will delve into, just because this was a game that was so great to see Alexi reach the heights that we know he can do, and so regularly did last season, was right towards the end of the game when I don't remember who floated the ball into him, but the way he took the ball down, beat a defender, and this I'm talking about the penalty that should have been. Mm. You know, that was the confident, the electric Alexi that I think of, and I think, you know, having seen that performance, just, you know, just what that first goal did for him, and, you know, he got the assist just prior. When Alexi, as I was referring to, when he reaches that kind of performance and on a consistent basis, then I think that really could push us forward. You know, it doesn't, as long as a defensive midfielder in Flamini or whoever it is that plays it is good enough, if Ozil and Alexis, as we've seen with Ozil throughout the season, if Alexis matches that, then it's not going to matter too much, I don't think. But most games, they have the capability between the two of them to blow teams away. And I really think that we've actually been kind of, you know, skipping through a lot of the season so far with one arm tied behind our back, because we've been without, by far and away, our best player from last season for the majority of it, and not, you know, sort of lacking, you know, he hasn't physically been missing, but I think whether mentally or or whatever it has been that has been hindering his performances. And you think if he does hit that run, then perhaps we will too. So I think that's something to look forward to. And hopefully, you know, maybe a game like this is what he needed.
Yeah, good point. So who was your man of the match?
Is that a serious question?
Yeah.
I've just waxed lyrical about Alexi for the past like 5 minutes, and I will use all of my previous and wonderful insight to refer to as to why Alexi was my man of the match.
Okay.
What I will respond with though is one thing I did find promising is it was good for it was nice to see a player like Hector, I thought, struggled quite significantly on his return against West Brom. I thought he had a good, consistent game. And I think it was just the kind of game that he needed, almost just to kind of settle him back into that first 11. Because he's been you know, a huge part of the success of the opening part of the Premier League season thus far. And we had looked a much weaker side at the back, given the kind of the performance that he had put in away from home. Yeah. And I felt that was a much needed sort of positive to come out of the game. I'm not suggesting he sort of set the game at light, but I thought he had a much more consistent and solid performance, which can only be good for the side.
So I'd go with Ozil, and I just thought he was absolutely spectacular, astounding. He could have, not only did he have a goal and I guess something assisty, but he could have scored two more easily. He ran that game. I thought he was absolutely sensational. And so I have this thing going through my head at the moment in terms of Sanchez and Ozil, because they're really starting to find each other and play with each other. And it's almost like Lennon and McCartney. You know, when I was a kid, I thought it was really cool that they wrote all the songs together. And then I found out that they actually didn't. You know, Lennon would write half of them and McCartney would write half of them. And then George had bitched that they never used his songs. And then they used some of his. So Ringo bitched a bit. So they played Yellow Submarine, God help us all. But anyway, back to Lennon and McCartney. So one would write it, but they'd both. It's almost like that at the moment. I mean, the way they play off each other, you know, either directly or indirectly, sometimes, you know, they're using somebody in between them, pinging it between Cazorla, etc. Or you got the Spanish-speaking left wing with Monreal, Alexis, Cazorla heading over there, and Ozil, who's undoubtedly got a bit of Spanish to him after whatever it was, 4 years. But the Lennon-McCartney thing between the two of those, I mean, you know, either one's creating and the other one's scoring, they're making something happen. There's something really huge that you don't see it in every game, because some games it's by narrower margins, but you really saw it. One of the things I loved about that game was you really saw those guys and Cazorla. You know, on another day he would have been man of the match, but Sanchez and Ozil I thought were simply outstanding in that game. Now maybe it a little bit of it was the fact that it was Dinamo Zagreb, but they came to play, they worked their socks off. We've seen against teams like Anderlecht that just because we should win at the Emirates doesn't mean it's going to be plain sailing. And, you know, they know the dark arts too. They weren't there to make it easy for us. I just thought those two guys were just freaking Lennon and McCartney, where Ozil's McCartney, by the way, writing Yesterday, and those beautiful, smooth, silky ballads that even Frank Sinatra wants to sing, and Sanchez's, you know, rock and chaos, right, and revolution, and shaking the world up. But I just thought Ozil was outstanding, and for me, slightly pipped Sanchez. And I feel bad about that because, I mean, Sanchez, you know, I've just nominated him the new Aguero and still given the man of the match to Ozil. But I just thought they were simply outstanding.
You're a sick man.
I am.
And I'll tell you why. You managed to mention Anderlecht twice.
Sorry, guys.
In one podcast.
Sorry.
But then aside, I mean,
I just think it's too dangerous to say it was simply Dinamo Zagreb. I think that's...
I think totally that's a agree. Fob. And I think Ozil was absolutely exquisite. I mean, But at this point, you almost don't need to say anything about Mesut because for the entirety of the season, he has been phenomenal. And he's been the man of the match in the large majority of our games throughout the beginning of this season. And I mean, he's been an absolute joy to watch. I felt, especially because Alexi did get two, got the assist. He obviously played a big part in every single one of the three goals. I think it was almost more pronounced just because I've been waiting for the real Alexi to stand up. And we got that performance from him.
I know, when the real Alexis stood up, it was Sergio Aguero. Oh no, I'm not So what was really interesting about Ozil was both him and the manager talked about him being more aggressive, going after goals and stuff in one form or another, and it was almost like they were disagreeing. Wenger was saying, about being more aggressive, going for goals, and he'd never seen him kind of attacking the box as often as he does right now. Here's a little pop quiz for you. Is Ozil on target to beat, per number of games played, is he ahead, behind, or the same as last year in terms of number of goals per game?
Per goal? Of goals? I would certainly guess ahead.
Guess what? He's exactly on track.
I should have known it was a trick question, Paul.
Now, it's early days. He's whatever. What have we played? Something like 12 in the league. And several, whatever it is, Champions League games. So it's still early in the season, but he's actually exactly on track for goals scored. He's only got, I think, three. Where he's really tearing it up is on assists. And it's almost like the two of them are arguing through the press because he's very nicely saying, goals schmoles, he just wants the guy who's in the best position to score. So what I think is going on is, yes, he is attacking. He is making those runs. He is getting into more aggressive areas. And he could have had two more goals yesterday to be fair, 2 days ago. This is Thanksgiving today. But it's really showing up by him getting into even better positions to create assists rather than the pass before the pass or chances or waiting. Last year we talked about him needing runners and blah, blah, blah. This year he's kind of his own runner to a greater degree. He's more impactful. His shoulders are bigger. You can see it about him now. He's strutting around the pitch in a very low-key Ozil way. And it's not really showing up in his goals totals. It's showing up across his whole game, his contribution. Even in our bad games, he's all in. I thought he was really good against West Brom. I noticed Arsblog gave him 5 in his player ratings and similarly in other places. And while I understand that, because nobody deserved to get out of that game with higher than 5 against West Brom, actually our second half was pretty decent, we just didn't capitalize on it. I thought Ozil was really good. He was really good again, you name it, against Bayern when we were universally shite. He actually helped us create enough chances to win that game by some weird concoction if we'd put things away and maybe got in ourselves ahead of them with a little bit of luck. I mean, the chances were there to do something because he kept grafting away. He hasn't done that thing where his head went down in former years. And I think that's the change. Not the goals, but his persona. He's further up the pitch. He's more aggressive and he's making things happen. I just thought he was sensational. And that may be why we win the league this year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think actually one of his biggest criticisms had been that in big games, when we as a team hadn't performed well, he was quite ostensibly one of the weakest performers on the pitch. And his level seemingly dropped dramatically whenever the team as a whole weren't quite at the races. And you look to, you know, well, I think of, you know, you've brought up the Anderlecht game. Well, let me let me bring up a couple of other bring out a couple of other skeletons from the closet. You know, you look to the Anfield 5-1 and the Stamford Bridge game, and you know, he was remonstrated quite heavily following those types of performances. Yet, as you say, I think now he really feels like the man in the team. He feels like the big dog in this side, and he seems to really lead the charge. No matter the performance and the type of game we're facing now, and I think that's a real big positive. And as I continue to reiterate, once, and I think it's only inevitable, but once Alexi reaches that level too, I think will be an absolute joy to watch going forward. And I think that those types of players in a team can be enough to hide the other, as long as the problems and the cracks aren't too big, I think they themselves are able to overcome it. So here's to hoping that Ozil continues his excellent and exquisite and all the adjectives to describe his the wonderful man that he is, and Alexi matches it soon.
Yeah. Right, well, I think we've got our money's worth out of Dinamo Zagreb. What do you think? What do you think the odds on us progressing to the next round of the Champions League and avoiding Spurs Day in the Europa League?
Spurs Day.
What would you put it at? 50-50?
Something like that, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I said it after we lost the second game. For whatever reason, I couldn't have told you what I thought the exact sort of maths behind it would have been, but I just feel like this team always has a way of making it through this stage, and I'd refer to the Invincibles. You know, obviously there was that turning point when they beat Inter Milan 5-1.
Yeah.
And I just think with the quality we have and the kind of the ability we have to react to that type of game situation. I mean, the association actually is the sort of glorious failure that is now attributed to this Arsenal side over the last decade or so. But I think we'll do it. Perhaps, you know, from a bookmaker's point of view, it is somewhat closer to 50-50. Olympiacos is no easy place to go.
No.
It's a very hostile.
And two goals is a lot. Ground. You know, they'll be at home. They could easily nick a goal. It might even not be nicking it, so we could well be looking for three goals away, which is a big ask. So it's going to be a tough game, but a big psychological boost if we pull it off. So the game at the weekend, Norwich on Sunday, I believe, Carrow Road, isn't it? So Ramsey, do you think he'll start him? Is he ready?
You play Ramsey. I think he gave him the 30 minutes in preparation for.
Yeah, Tim thought he'd play against Zagreb, which I thought was a bit aggressive, especially given it's Champions League. And while I still think that it's all about the Premier League for us, so I guess I wasn't too surprised to see him playing.
If it had been the Olympiacos game at that exact date, relative to when you know, to his sort of like injury progress, I think Ramsey would have played. But I think he felt that there was enough quality in the side, and it was a good opportunity to ease him back into match fitness. But I'm convinced he'll start.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's Thanksgiving. Let's wrap this puppy up in bacon and pop him in the oven, and let's appreciate that. That was a fun run through. I guess that's it then, James. Thank you very much for sharing the load today, and up the Arsenal.
Cheers, Paul, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you very much. Off for the turkey. Thanks, guys. Bye, everybody.